paraphrase of Daniel's 11th chapter to the 35th verse inclusive. The date of the prophecy is the third year of Cyrus, B.C. 540, and runs thus. Behold, there shall stand up yet
three kings in Persia, namely, Ahasuerus, Smerdis, and Darius. And the fourth, or Xerxes, shall be far richer than they all. And by his strength, through his riches, he shall stir up all against the realm of Grecia. And Alexander the Macedonian, a mighty king, shall stand up, ruling with great dominion and according to his will. And when he shall stand up, having suffered no defeat, his kingdom shall be broken and shall be divided into four kingdoms toward the four winds of heaven. But their glory and power shall not fall to his posterity, nor according to the extent of his dominion which he ruled, for his kingdom shall be plucked up, even for other rulers besides those of his family. And the king of the south, Ptolemy Soter, shall be strong and shall be one of his, Alexander's, princes or generals. And he shall be strong above him and have dominion. His dominion shall be a great dominion, extending over Egypt, Libya, Cyrenaica, Arabia, Palestine, Coele-Syria, and most of the maritime provinces of Asia Minor, with the island of Cyprus and several others in the Aegean Sea, and even some cities of Greece, as Sicyon and Corinth. Such was the dominion of Ptolemy Soter, the first Macedonian king of Egypt. And in the end of 52 years from 301 BC, they, the kings of Egypt and Assyro-Macedonia, shall associate themselves together. For the king's daughter of the south, Berenice, the daughter of Ptolemy Philadelphus, shall come or be conducted to Antiochus Theos, the king of the north, to make a marriage agreement. But she shall not retain the power of the arm of her father Ptolemy Philadelphus. Neither shall he, her husband Antiochus, stand. For Laodice, his reputed wife, whom he shall receive again when he divorces Berenice after her father's death, shall cause him to be poisoned. Nor shall his arm, Berenice, stand. But she shall be given up to suffer death, and they, the Egyptians also, that brought her to Syria, and he, her son, whom she brought forth, and he that strengthened her in these times, shall die, and thus leave her to the mercy of Laodice, which will be treachery and death. But out of a branch of her parent roots shall Ptolemy Euergetes, her brother, stand up in his estate. Interrupt here with a footnote. This is the Ptolemy of the decree of Canopus, found in the field of Zone in 1866 and now in the Gizeh Museum, Cairo. I'll start that paragraph again. But out of a branch of her parent roots shall Ptolemy Euergetes, her brother, stand up in his estate or kingdom, and come with an army, and shall enter into Antioch, the capital, and the fortress of the king of the north, and shall deal, or make war, against them, even against Laodice and her son Seleucus, and shall prevail. And Euergetes shall also carry captive into Egypt their gods with their princes, and with their precious vessels of silver and of gold, and he shall continue to reign 9 more years than the king of the north, who shall die a prisoner in Parthia 5 years before the king of Egypt. So the king of the south shall come into his kingdom and shall return into his own land, 244 BC. But his, Seleucus Callinicus' sons, Seleucus Tyrannus and Antiochus, shall be stirred up to war, and shall assemble a multitude of great forces, and one of them, even Antiochus the Great, shall certainly come and overflow through the passes of Libanus, and pass through into Galilee, and possess himself of all that part of the country which was formerly the inheritance of the tribes of Reuben and Gad, and of the half tribe of Manasseh. Then, the season being too far advanced to prolong the campaign, shall he return to Ptolemais, where he shall put his forces into winter quarters. But, early in the spring of 217 BC, Ptolemy Philopater shall march with a large army to Raphia, by which Antiochus shall be stirred up again to war, and defeated with great slaughter, so that he shall return to his fortress. Thus shall the king of the south be moved with choler, and come forth and fight with the king of the north. And the king of the north shall set forth a great multitude, even 72,000 foot and 6,000 horse, but the multitude shall be given into the hand of the king of Egypt. And when he, the king of the south, hath taken away the multitude by a signal defeat of Antiochus, his heart shall be lifted up, for he will desire to enter the most holy place of the temple. But while he was preparing to enter, he was stricken and carried off for dead. In his victory over Antiochus, he shall cast down 10,000, even 10,000 foot and 300 horse. But, not following up his advantage, Philopater shall not be strengthened by his victory. For Antiochus the Great, the king of the north, shall return and set forth a multitude of troops, greater than the former, and shall certainly come after certain, that is, 19 years after the Battle of Raphia, or 198 BC, with a great army and with much riches, and shall subjugate all Palestine and Coele-Syria. And in those times, when Ptolemy Epiphanes shall reign over Egypt, this is the Ptolemy of the Rosetta Stone found near Rosetta in 1799, which is now in the British Museum. I'll start that sentence again then. And in those times, when Ptolemy Epiphanes shall reign over Egypt, many shall stand up against the infant king of the south, even the kings of Macedonia and of Syria, and Scopas, the general of his deceased father. But the deputies of the Romans, the breakers of thy people, Daniel, shall interfere to establish the vision. They became the guardians and protectors of Epiphanes during his minority, and appointed three deputies, who were ordered to acquaint the king with their resolution and to enjoin them not to infest the dominions of their royal pupil, for that otherwise they should be forced to declare war against them. The deputy, Emilius, one of the three, after delivering the message of the Roman Senate, proceeded to Alexandria and settled everything to as much advantage as the state of affairs in Egypt would then admit. In this way, the Romans began to mix themselves up with the affairs of Egypt, Palestine, and Syria, and in a few years established themselves as lords paramount of the East, and so constituted a power in Asia, symbolized by the little horn of the goat, and in the 36th verse styled the king. But though they should be the breakers of Israel, the assurance was given to Daniel, saying, they shall fall. So the king of the north, being checked by the Romans, shall come into Palestine, and shall cast up a mound against Sidon, where he shall besiege the forces of the Egyptians. And he shall take Jerusalem, the city of munitions, from the castle of which he shall expel the Egyptian garrison. And the arms of the south shall not withstand neither his chosen people, neither shall there be any strength to withstand Antiochus. But Antiochus the Great, who cometh against Ptolemy Epiphanes, shall do according to his own will in Coele-Syria and Palestine, and none shall stand before him. And he shall make a permanent stand in the glorious land of Israel, which by his hand shall be consumed. He shall also set his face to enter into Greece with the strength of his whole kingdom, and Israelites with him. Thus shall he do to incorporate Greece into his dominion, by which the Romans, who had recently proclaimed it free, would be stirred up against him. Therefore, to secure the neutrality of their Egyptian ally, he shall give Cleopatra, the daughter of women, or princess royal, to Epiphanes, to wife, corrupting her to betray him by resigning to him Coele-Syria and Palestine as her dower, but on condition that he should receive half the revenues. Thus the land of Israel was given over as a bribe to bind Cleopatra to her father's interests, that she might influence Epiphanes either to remain neutral or to declare against the Romans his protectors. But she shall cleave to her husband and not stand, neither be for him, but shall join with her husband in congratulating the Roman Senate on the victory they had gained over her father at Thermopylae. That was in 191 BC. After this shall Antiochus, at the earnest solicitation of the Aetolians, turn his face unto the isles of Greece, and shall take many, but a military commander, Scipio, the Roman consul, shall cause the reproach offered by him to cease. Without his own disgrace, he, Scipio, shall cause it to turn upon Antiochus by defeating him at Mount Sipylus and repulsing him from every part of Asia Minor. As the condition of peace, the Romans required him to pay 1,500 talents, 500 down, 2,500 on the ratification of the treaty, and the rest in 12 years at 1,000 talents per annum. These terms being acceded to, he shall turn his face toward the fortress, or capital, of his own land, being much at a loss how to raise the tribute. While in the province of Elymais, he heard of a considerable treasure in the temple of Jupiter Belus. He accordingly broke into it in the dead of night and carried off its riches, but he shall stumble and fall and not be found, for the provincials, exasperated at the robbery, rebelled against him and murdered him and all his attendants, BC 187. Then shall stand up in Antiochus' estate or kingdom his son, Seleucus Philippator, one who causeth an exactor to pass over the glory of the kingdom, the business of his reign being to raise the tribute for the Romans. But within a few days, that is 12 years, he shall be destroyed, neither in anger nor in battle, being poisoned by Heliodorus, his prime minister, having reigned long enough to pay the last instalment to the Romans. And in his, Seleucus Philippator's, place shall stand up Heliodorus, a vile person, being both a poisoner and usurper, to whom they, the authorities of the nation, shall give the honour of the kingdom. But Antiochus Epiphanes shall come in peaceably and obtain the kingdom by flatteries bestowed on the party of Heliodorus. And with the arms of a flood, by which they shall be formidably invaded, shall they, the Egyptians, be overflown from before Antiochus, whom they excite to war by demanding the restitution of Coele-Syria and Palestine, and they shall be broken or subdued. Yea, also Onias, the prince or high priest of the Mosaic covenant, shall be murdered, as in 172 BC it came to pass. And after the league made with Ptolemy Philometor, Antiochus shall work deceitfully after his second invasion of Egypt, 170 BC, for he shall come up to Alexandria, and he shall become strong with a small people or army. By his deceit, he shall enter peaceably even upon the fattest places of the province to which he reduces Egypt. And he, Antiochus, shall do that which his fathers, or predecessors, have not done, nor his father's fathers, namely, he shall scatter among his followers the prey and spoil and riches. Yea, he shall forecast his devices against the strongholds of Egypt, even for a time. And he shall stir up his power and his courage against the king of the south with a great army, and the king of the south shall be stirred up to battle with a very great and mighty army, but he shall not stand. For the Alexandrians, seeing him in the hands of Antiochus, and lost to them, shall forecast devices against him, and place the crown of Egypt upon the head of his brother, Euergetes the second. Yea, they that feed of the portion of Philometor's meet, even his courtiers, shall separate or renounce him, and his Antiochus army shall overflow Egypt, and many of the Egyptians shall fall down slain. And the hearts of both these kings shall be to do mischief, and they shall speak lies at one table, but shall not prosper, for the end is yet at the time appointed. Then shall Antiochus Epiphanes return into his land with great riches, and his heart shall be against the holy covenant, and he shall do terrible things against Jerusalem, taking it by storm, butchering 80,000 men, making 40,000 prisoners, and causing a like number to be sold for slaves. And then shall he return to his own land, laden with the spoils of the temple, amounting to 1,800 talents, or 270,000 pounds, that, of course, in the time of Dr. Thomas. That occurred in 169 BC. At the time appointed, under pretense of restoring Philometor to the throne, he shall return and come toward the south against Alexandria to besiege it. But it, this fourth invasion, shall not be as the former or as the latter. He raised the siege and marched toward Memphis, where he installed Philometor as king. As soon, however, as he had departed, Philometor came to an understanding with Euergetes, and they agreed to a joint reign over Egypt. This, coming to the ears of Antiochus, he led a powerful army against Memphis for the purpose of subduing the country. Having nearly accomplished his project, he marched toward Alexandria, which was the only obstacle to his becoming absolute master of Egypt. But the Roman embassy sent at the request of the Ptolemies met him about a mile from the city. They had left Rome with the utmost diligence. When they arrived at Delos, they found a fleet of Macedonian or Greek ships, on board of which they embarked for Alexandria, where they arrived at the crisis of his approach. Popilius delivered him the decree of the Senate and demanded an immediate answer. Sorely against his will, he agreed to obey its mandate and draw off his army from Egypt. Thus his invasion terminated very differently from the former. For the ships of Kittim shall come against him and prevent him from incorporating Egypt into his Assyrian kingdom of the north. All his wrath was kindled at this interference. Therefore he shall be grieved and return and have indignation against the Holy Covenant. For in his return march through Palestine, he detached 20,000 men under Apollonius, with orders to destroy Jerusalem in 168 BC. So shall he do, he shall even return and have intelligence with them that forsake the Holy Covenant. And arms shall stand on his part under Apollonius, and they, the Assyro-Macedonian troops, shall pollute the temple, or sanctuary of strength, by shedding the blood of the worshippers in its courts. And they shall take away the daily sacrifice, and they shall place a strong fort and garrison to command the temple, even the abomination that maketh desolate, and overawes the nation. As soon as Antiochus Epiphanes was returned to Antioch, he published a decree by which all his subjects were required to conform to his religion. This was aimed chiefly at the Jews, whose religion and nation he was resolved to extirpate. Athenius, a man advanced in years and extremely well versed in all the ceremonies of the Grecian idolatry, was commissioned to carry the edict into effect in Judea and Samaria. As soon as he arrived at Jerusalem, he began by suppressing the daily or burnt offering of continuance and all the observances of Jewish law. He caused the Sabbaths and other festivals to be profaned, forbade the circumcision of children, carried off and burnt all copies of the law wherever they could be found, and put to death whoever acted contrary to the decree of the king. To establish it the sooner in every part of the nation, altars and chapels filled with idols were erected in every city, and sacred groves were planted. Officers were appointed over these, who caused the people generally to offer sacrifices in them every month, on the day of the month on which the king was born, who made them eat swine's flesh and other unclean animals sacrificed there. The temple in Jerusalem was dedicated to Jupiter Olympus, whose statue was placed within it. Thus he did in his great indignation against Yahweh and his people Israel. And such of the Jews, as do wickedly against the covenant, shall Antiochus by flatteries cause to dissemble. These not only forsook the holy covenant, but had intelligence with the king, and aided him all they could in the desolation with which he was overspreading the country. But the Maccabees and their adherents, people who do know their God, shall be strong and do valiantly in war, and they, even Mattathias and his five sons, that understood among the people, shall instruct and encourage many. Yet they of their party shall fall by the sword and by flame, by captivity and by spoil days. Now when they shall fall by these calamities, they shall be holpen with a little help. For while Antiochus was amusing himself by celebrating games at Daphne, Judas Maccabeus had raised the standard of independence and was helping his countrymen in Judea. He levied a small army, fortified the cities, rebuilt the fortresses, threw strong garrisons into them, and thereby awed the whole country. He defeated and killed Apollonius and made great slaughter of the troops. With 3,000 men he defeated Lysias with 47,000, and another army of 20,000 under Timotheus and Bacchides. In the year 170 BC he gave Lysias a second defeat at Bethsura, by which he dispersed 65,000 of the enemy. Yet many shall cleave to them, the Maccabees, with flatteries, for it was a time of trial. And therefore some of them of understanding shall fall to try them and to purge and make them white for the time of the end, because it, the time of the end, is yet for a time appointed. The 35th verse of this 11th chapter brings us down to the end of 430 years from the destruction of the city and temple of Jerusalem by the Chaldeans. There is here a break in the prophecy. Nothing more is said about Israel and the king of the north until the prediction is resumed in the 40th verse, which may be regarded as continuous with verse 35. The latter speaks of their being tried and made white to or till the time of the end, and then the 40th reintroduces the king of the south and the king of the north, and outlines the events they were to bring to pass in that time, and which will end in the resurrection, when they who have been tried and made white in the long interval will stand in their lot with Daniel at the end of 1,335 days. With the exception of the little help derived from the victories of the Maccabees, the history of Israel has been a series of calamities to this day, and will so continue to be till the end appointed for their deliverance arrives. But the Maccabean epoch is particularly interesting as the termination of Ezekiel's 430 years. The house of Israel and the house of Judah had been great transgressors of the Holy Covenant from the foundation of the temple in the fourth year of Solomon to the sack of the city in the 19th of Nebuchadnezzar. This was a period of 430 years which was divided into two periods, namely one of 40 years from the foundation of the temple to the apostasy of Rehoboam and Judah, the other of 390 from this apostasy to the destruction of the temple. God determined that this long national transgression should be punished by as long a retribution. He therefore gave Israel a sign of what was coming upon them. This consisted in Ezekiel lying on his left side 390 days and then upon his right for 40 days more. By this sign was represented the prostrate condition of Israel for 430 years. The 430 years of transgression had not quite ended when the sign was appointed in the fifth year of Jehoiachin's captivity. The thing signified began to take effect in the sacking of Jerusalem. Israel then began to eat their defiled bread among the Gentiles, so that the 430 years would end 161 BC, according to my chronology. These four centuries of punishment were a very calamitous period of Jewish history. They endured a captivity in Babylon for 70 years. For several years more their times were troublous. They were vassals to the Persians till their dominion was overthrown by Alexander. Afterwards, as we have seen, they were alternately subject to the king of the south and the king of the north, and their land became a field of battle for the hosts of these powers who defiled the temple and at length converted it into a house for the worship of Jupiter. But a very few years before the 430 years were about to expire, Judas Maccabeus commenced a war against Antiochus Epiphanes, which ended in the recovery of Jerusalem, the purification of the temple from the heathen worship, its rededication to God, and the erection of Judea into an independent kingdom under the Asmoneans, which continued until it was placed under Herod the Idumean by the Romans about 39 years before Christ.